Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Fixed Income Conversation Corner podcast series on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today, glad to welcome back from the UBS Chief Investment Office, Head of Taxable Fixed Income Strategy Americas, Leslie Falconio. Leslie is joined today by Mike Kontopoulos, Director of Fixed Income at Richard Bernstein Advisors, RBA. So with that, Leslie, Mike, thank you for dropping by and for spending some time today with our listeners and clients. Leslie, I'll now pass it over to you to lead today's conversation with Mike. Welcome back.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate that. And Mike, thanks so much for doing this for us. These are interesting times, so it's great to hear your and RBA's point of view. So let's get right into it. I mean, when we think about 2023 and 2024, entering into both those years and about a couple months in, we've had the shifting narrative, right? In both situations, there's been this narrative entering years that the economy would be a little bit weak, that it would falter a bit sooner than maybe what the market was pricing in, and then suddenly you get these economic numbers that are showing a bit more resiliency, and we once again sort of shift to a more soft landing consensus. So I'm just curious, I mean, what's RBA's economic view for 24, and how do you sort of see that view transpiring to fixed income?
Yeah, Leslie, first of all, thanks for having me on today. You know, listen, we've been in the camp for quite some time that economic growth is likely bottomed in 2023 and is in the process of reaccelerating, at least for the moment. You know, there's several reasons for that. When you look at corporate earnings are accelerating. They bottomed, large cap earnings bottomed roughly a year ago. Small cap earnings appear to have bottomed just a couple quarters ago or in Q4. And that's happening at a time where you have, sub 4% unemployment. It's hard to see why economic growth should slow meaningfully at this particular juncture, certainly not to the extent that many were predicting, which is, of course, a recession. That to us seemed a bit far-fetched, 3 months ago, 6 months ago, a couple months ago. In our belief, the consumer is still strong. Although you've had a tremendous amount of interest rate hikes and policy tightening, you look at some of the speculation in the market, the meme stocks, you look at cryptos, you look at the Magnificent Seven, Super Six, whatever they're called today, and I would argue that liquidity may be a bit looser than what most appreciate. And of course, that's accretive to economic growth. And so, as we look out towards fixed income this year, I think our position is don't be a hero with regards to rates. Don't be a hero with regards to interest rate risk. Don't be a hero by just going out and buying ag product and calling it a day. I think investors are going to have to be smarter than that. They're going to have to be more nimble. They're not going to get a tremendous amount of alpha from the rate component of fixed income. So instead, they're going to have to look to other areas of the market to sort of navigate what will likely be a stronger than expected economy, but one where we already have tight spreads and sort of rich valuations, throughout much of the traditional spaces in fixed income.
So when we think about, what investors need to do and combined with what the market is pricing in, I mean, we know that, initially, once again, the market was a little bit overzealous in terms of pricing in the potential amount of rate cuts in 2024 and started off with, close to 170 basis points of cuts. They were going to start in March. We've since, and the market has since, moved more towards that Fed guidance of, say, around 75 basis points, a mid-year start. But, two things. One is, what is your outlook sort of the path for the Fed over the next 6 to 12 months? And number two, because you had mentioned this, earlier, when we think about how loose financial conditions are today, given the outperformance of both equity and risk assets within fixed income, do you think that plays a role in the decision-making at all going forward in regards to the Fed action?
So to your first question, Leslie, I think I think the market's probably still a bit ahead and the Fed, quite frankly, is a bit ahead of itself. I think it's going to be tough for the Fed to cut three times this year. It wouldn't shock me entirely to see a cut in June or July. I mean, I don't think that would surprise me. The problem is, if you look at a lot of the inflation gauges out there, the bottom was in June of last year. So you're going to start overlapping that bottom come right around the time, maybe they do the first cut. And then you look at a lot of the forward-looking measures of rental inflation, look at home prices, et cetera, they're starting to trend higher. So some of the tailwind that you're getting in lower inflation through OER may actually get stubbornly more difficult as you get more towards the middle of this year and maybe come down to 2.8 or 2.9 or something on inflation only to see a trend back up above 3 again. And so I could see a world where the Fed, you know, cuts once this year, maybe even at some point, depending on what happens with profit growth and obviously inflation in the back half, maybe even starts talking about, you know, removing that hike and going back up again. And so that wouldn't shock me one bit. I don't think it should shock investors either. So, you know, I think 3 is probably still on the high side in terms of what they will ultimately do this year. And I'll tell you, based on history, you know, I feel pretty comfortable saying that because the Fed's own dot plot almost never becomes reality. Remember when they weren't anticipating that they were going to have to hike, and then it went ahead and had to hike, as we know, you know, well north of 500 basis points, and they were predicting none for a while, right up until when they did it. So I've taken the dot plot and investor expectations with a grain of salt here and really trying to follow the economic data instead. In terms of, sorry, I lost my track now of what the second question was there.
Just in terms of whether or not you think financial conditions, as loose as they are, plays a role in the Fed thinking when it comes to the next move.
You know, I don't think it makes too big a deal. I mean, I'm sure it's in the back of the head. I'm sure they discuss it at meetings. But I don't think, I think they welcome the recent easing of financial conditions around, say, high yield debt or leveraged loans, right? You obviously have, you know, issuance starting to pick up in those areas of the market. And that's, from the Fed's perspective, I think that's very healthy. You don't want shut credit markets. Not that it was ever completely shut, but it's certainly, you know, risky debt was moving away more towards private markets. The banks were really shying away from lending. And although, you know, lending is still very, very tight, lending standards are begin to loosen on the margins. And I think they're probably happy about that, quite frankly. I think they see it as a positive to what it means for economic growth in achieving the mythical soft landing. So, you know, I don't think they've loosened enough from their perspective for it to influence what they're doing. Now, should it? I just look at Bitcoin every day, and it looks to me like there's just still too much money out there, and I think it probably should affect what they do, but do I think it actually does? No, I don't think it actually does.
So when we think about, and I agree with you in terms of the Fed dot plot, we know that, you know, the Fed dot plot is rarely correct. It's really just meant as a long-term sort of guide. But with that said, I mean, if you look at history, when the Fed cuts, it normally cuts quickly and by a decent amount of magnitude. So I'll say, obviously, the CIO is that they do cut in 2024 from what the data we have right now. And to your point, and, you know, the risk is the certain amount of reacceleration, which may be in the marketplace. We know CPI is out next week. It'll probably could potentially be, you know, a little higher on the headline given gas prices. But when we think about, you know, going forward and the potential of the Fed to cut, or even the market's expectation, alongside, you know, loosening financial conditions, the fact that, you know, higher credit embedded sectors have done so well, you know, even as interest rates have risen the first couple of months, where do you see that relative value within fixed income, which in many sectors within fixed income as a whole, we would consider on the tighter side and spread?
Yeah, I think we agree with you there, especially in what I would call ag product, you know, run-of-the-mill corporate credit. Now even agency debt to some degree as well. I mean, we had some great opportunities to add agency debt last year, and that's rallied a ton. You know, investment grade corporates to me make no sense whatsoever. When you're at 95 basis points spread levels, which is where we are today, historically, you very rarely earn your yield over the next 12 months. So if the market's yielding about 5.4% today, when we look out over the investment grade markets returns a year from now, it's likely to be below 5.4%. So I don't think there's a lot of value in run-of-the-mill fixed rate corporate credit here. Mortgages, you know, are fine, but you have to choose the right spot for coupon stack to really sort of, you know, derive any value. Treasuries, in my view, are right around fair value. You know, our fair value model as of today, that the 10-year should be about 4.2 to 4.3%. We're about 4.1% on the rich side of fair value, but not by a lot. So, you know, what RBA is trying to do is look outside of the ag. The great thing about the fixed income market today, in particular the advent of fixed income ETFs, is that you can get institutional products that you never were able to get before as a retail investor. One of those products is something that I like quite a bit and does actually trade with much more reasonable levels, and that's CLOs, collateralized loan obligations. You know, AAA CLOs are almost an enhanced cash vehicle. I say almost just because when you do get big, big drawdowns like in March of 2020, the liquidity will cause larger price drops than enhanced cash. But this is a very, very safe product with virtually zero default risk over the last 35 years. Triple B CLOs yield, almost 8.75% currently with triple B credit risk. I'd much rather be invested in the CLO market if I wanted to take credit risk, which I think is worth doing given the strong economic backdrop, the accelerating profit cycle that we're seeing, you know, the higher for longer rate environment. Owning cyclicality and fixed income makes sense from a fundamental point of view. It just doesn't make sense in this sort of IG credit, high yield credit, fixed rate debt. Instead, you can get cheap cyclicality to take advantage of that macro backdrop in CLOs. And that's what we're really putting a lot of our capital towards right now. We've owned the AAA piece for quite some time, and that's worked out really, really well for us and is now layered in triple Bs very recently as well.
So when we think about, I mean, you sort of mentioned your rate outlook at that 4.2, 4.3, so I don't want to sort of pound the one. I mean, we're a little bit lower than that. We think we go in the threes, you know, 3.50, 3.75, simply because we believe 2025 cuts will be priced forward. But given that rate outlook, let me just ask you about what you think in terms of the shape of the curve. Now, we know we've been inverted for an incredibly long period of time. I mean, I think, you know, not just 2 cents, but I think that like the 3 months, 10-year is historical time of inversion. How do you think that plays out, you know, once the Fed does start to cut, given the fact that it'll be priced, again, the forward cuts will be priced in sooner than they actually clear until the data shows differently. But what's your sort of thought on, you know, I know your rate view, but in terms of how that impacts the curve shape?
Yeah, so I think there's two things I'll just throw out there. One is the estimate I threw out earlier of about 4.2 to 4.3 in the 10 years, really a fair value estimate. Based on leading economic indicators, the Fed funds rate, the size of the Fed balance sheet, and inflation, which explains about 92% of the 10-year at any given moment. So it's not really meant to be a forecast by any stretch of the imagination, but rather just sort of given those factors what the fair value should be today. I don't disagree with you. I think we could see a sub 4% 10-year. I mean, heck, we're only 9 basis points away today. But I think we're going to be more range-bound. I think you could see 375 to 475. Depending what happens, you know, with the Bank of Japan, they start hiking interest rates, depending on what happens with regards to fears around the U.S. debt levels. I mean, those will probably be buying opportunities should you get out to 4.75 or 5% again. But I could see a world in which we're pretty range-bound here within 100 basis point range for the foreseeable future. In terms of the curve, I think for the next 6 months, you know, the curve's probably not going to do a whole lot. And the reason why is because if we go with the assumption that the Fed cuts in June, that's just going to meet market expectations. So over the next 6 months, I think, you know, the curve is going to be pretty much where it is today, plus or minus 10, 15 basis points. As I look out longer term, though, as I look out over the next 12, 18, 24 months, it's inevitable that the curve is going to re-steepen and normalize and eventually turn positive again. And that will likely happen during the next recession. And so another thing that we have in our portfolio to take advantage of that is we have curve steepeners. And even though we don't expect those steepeners to really pay out and they're done through options over the next 3 or 6 months, you know, they are a nice portfolio hedge and also protect us against a Fed that perhaps, you know, cuts once and then inflation goes back up and you get bear steepening. We don't care why that steepening happens. It could be bear or bull steepening. And so I think investors, clients should have, you know, a position in their portfolio to ultimately compensate them for renormalization of the yield curve, even if, you know, RBA doesn't think that's going to happen, say, in the next, you know, quarter or two.
Yeah, we actually agree with that as well. We think the curve steepens also. You know, our biggest concern about the curve steepener is that, you know, it is I think, one of the more common allocations. And when, as you and I both know from being this years in the business, sometimes when that happens, when it's with such high expectations and, you know, you have the herd running to that curve steepener, sometimes it's the fatal surprise you have to worry about. But we're also with the curve steepener as well, so we agree there. I mean, what I think I do want to turn to just very quickly, and, you know, I can tell you from our CIO standpoint, you know, we take the view that mortgage credit is cheap to corporate credit. We do have more of the MBS, MBS securitized, even high-quality CMBS in positions now. Just simply, as you said, we're not worried that the corporates underperform, but obviously the performance going forward is going to be due to carry and interest rate exposure, not spread compression. But we do think that the securitized side is, you know, a bit on the cheap side, does offer a bit of relative value. So I'm just curious there, outside of the AAA CLOs, where do you see value within that?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You know, whereas we have no investment grade corporate exposure or high yield corporate exposure in the traditional sense, you know, roughly 30% of our fixed income allocation is in agency debt. Other securitized products look reasonably attractive as well. It's really the whole space, I would say, you know, some more than others. The whole space has pretty good value at the moment relative to corporates, but you still have to find the right spot, right? Like for agency debt, for example, you know, it's where to be on the coupon stack, right? It, with commercial, we don't earn any, but with, you know, CMBS, it's understanding, you know, where to be within the CMBS space, whether it's multifamily or otherwise. And so there's still sort of a fair amount of due diligence, I would say, that needs to happen within the securitized space. But broadly, I think the securitized market, because of its complexity, somewhat due to liquidity, it hasn't really caught up yet to the corporate market. And I think that's absolutely, that makes a lot of sense at the moment.
And just to clarify, Mike, when you say agency debt, you mean agency MBS debt, not agency debt.
Agency MBS debt.
Okay. Just to clarify. Yeah. No, that sounds good. And it's very, I mean, we actually have a similar, you know, point of view here, but I do want to get just some final thoughts from you in terms of whether it's, you know, wall of worry, what you think the markets aren't, you know, people aren't accounting for. Do you think that the election is going to have an impact on fixed income, or where do you see relative value either in the U.S. or abroad? Just any final thoughts that you would have and takeaways would be great.
Yeah, so I think since you mentioned the election, I'll throw it out there. I don't think it's going to have a big impact on fixed income. Both the nominees are known quantities, and so I don't think either will have a huge impact on fixed income. Probably the wall of worry, if you will, and we're positioned appropriately for this, but it's really a continued lack of appreciation of the economic strength of the United States of America and what that could ultimately mean for the Fed action and rates. And, you know, this could be 2005 or early 2006, and we could still have another year or two to go with this sort of economic acceleration, profit acceleration. And I'm not entirely sure fixed income investors are prepared for that. You know, how many times have we, you know, done podcasts, interviews on TV or watched them? And you know, it's always waiting for the rate cuts that, you know, never come. It's waiting for the slowdown that never comes. And I think that's okay. That's a good thing. You know, fixed income investors shouldn't be scared of that. There are a lot of ways to manage that environment and still get a good return. But with that said, with spreads where they are, we have to be a little bit careful. And it could take some folks by surprise, particularly, you know, if we were to end the year, say, at 4.5 or 4.75 on the 10-year, what becomes a promising, very good year for a lot of folks could be an underperforming sort of year. And, you know, that's sort of the big risk, I think, out there that's maybe a bit underappreciated at the moment.
So, I mean, with that said, just one final question, because this is something that is very on top of mind for our advisors and our clients. You know, let's talk about the huge growth in money market funds and some of these cash alternatives. So what do you think? I mean, do you think that some of this cash gets to be deployed? Do you think that, you know, given your potential of, you know, only one cut, that, you know, that part of the curve, those cash alternatives, you know, we know that, you know, the history of cash used to be about preservation, liquidity, and yield, and yield was the last one, not the first one.
Mm-hmm.
But it's obviously earned its seat at the table. So what do you think in terms of that? Do you think that they start to deploy some of this cash? Do you think it stays there? Could that be, you know, a tailwind to some of fixed income? I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think it could be a tailwind to fixed income. Don't, you know, I think advisors shouldn't mistake my excitement for the strength of the U.S. economy and profits and everything else and what that could mean for Treasury yields, you know, modestly higher from here as being suggestive of to avoid fixed income and to stay in money market funds or cash-like alternatives. Those two things aren't necessarily true because, again, the great thing about fixed income at the moment is there are tremendous amounts of options. Remember, there's trillions of dollars of debt, and we talked about a little bit of them, Leslie, is the securitized space is just one area, but then, of course, you've got, you know, bank loans, you've got EM, you've got preferred securities, which, you know, obviously delivered a fantastic return over the last 6 months. You've got lots of other areas of fixed income where you can generate pretty good returns in an environment where even interest rates go modestly higher. And so I still think it's an exciting time, and money should come off the sidelines from cash and money market funds because there are opportunities out there. They're just not necessarily the traditional ag opportunities that most people think of. And that's okay, right? And so I think now is a time where you should start seeing cash come off the sidelines because whether it's 6 months from now or 12 months from now or 18 months from now, we don't know. But those cash yields can disappear pretty, pretty quickly. And you could be leaving a lot of money on the table in fixed income if you're not invested in a good manager.
I completely agree. And, you know, like this has been a really great night, and I appreciate your time. So thanks so much, and we look forward to having you on again, probably after the March Fed and the new dot plot. So thanks so much.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliates. The views and opinions expressed in this material by external guest speakers are those of the author, speaker, and are not those of UBS, its subsidiaries, or affiliates. Accordingly, UBS does not accept any liability over the content of this material or any claims, losses, or damages arising from the use or reliance of all or any part thereof. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient, and is published for informational purposes only. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.